Today on Maine Calling, comedian Paula Poundstone. NPR listeners know Paula Poundstone from the show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. But that's just one of the items on her busy schedule. Poundstone still travels regularly doing stand-up comedy. She has a podcast, hosts a book club, and writes articles and books. All of it with a distinctive and quirky sense of humor grounded in her New England childhood. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we check in with Paula Poundstone. We'll ask her about books, cats, aging, and what the rest of the crew on Wait, Wait is really like. What do you want to ask Poundstone about her take on the world? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working this summer to purchase and protect the historic Morris Farm in Wiscasset. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org. By Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Get ready to smile, because comedy icon Paula Poundstone is with us today. She's back in Maine for a show at The Strand, and we figured we could all use a laugh or two, especially in these challenging times. Paula is an author, podcaster, and frequent panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And of course, we invite you to join the conversation. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Paula, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thank you very much. So nice to speak with you.
So I want to talk about all these other things you do in a minute, but I just noticed that you have an essay in a recent AARP magazine, and I was laughing because this is an article I can so relate to. When is being forgetful a sign of something that has to do with aging? When is being forgetful just who you are? I mean, I've always been a list maker. I love the calendar in my iPhone because of, well, I just don't remember all the little things.
Yeah, I'm the same. I used to say to my kids when they were little, they would say, you know, I was supposed to have a poster board for tomorrow. And I would say, well, did you tell me about it? Oh, I told you. Did you see me write it down? Because if you didn't see me write it down, that's the same as not telling me. And that, you know, that was years and years and years ago. Raising kids is stressful. I believe firmly that the majority of my forgetfulness comes from stress. And it's not new. I've been forgetting stuff for as long as I can remember. So this idea that every time you forget something, I find it so insulting when somebody will say to me, if I forget something or I stumble for a name or something, oh, you're having a senior moment. Like, pardon me. No, I'm not having a senior moment. I'm having a human moment.
I love it. I love it. And you know, it's funny, though, you think it's related to stress, and maybe this is just rationalization, but I've always thought, well, I can't remember all the little things because such big, deep thoughts are taking up most of my brain.
Okay, well, that in your case, you work for public radio. That's very possible in your case. You know, in my case, I have a lot of television theme songs in my head somewhere. So I don't think it's the same lofty ideas that are crowding out my brain. But I you know what? I know for certain that stress has a lot to do with forgetting. I know from sort of, I mean, I'm not a laboratory, but just the times in my life where I've been especially forgetful. When I swear I'm not making this up. When my kids were little and there was just so much going on, I would, at one point they were in like three different schools. I used to tape, if there was something that I needed to drop off at the school, like something that had to be signed, I would tape it to my shirt so that, because if I just put it in my pocket or I put it in a backpack or something, then I would get to the school and forget. So I would tape it to my shirt. So inevitably someone would say, hey, what's that on your shirt? And I'd go, oh, that. Yeah, I have to leave this here. It's very helpful. You know, it takes a village.
I like it. I like it. Well, speaking of aging, and I'm wondering, and I'm asking you this because you wrote an article for AARP magazine, so I think it's okay to talk about aging. I'm wondering if you feel wiser now than you did before. Do you feel like, okay, now I've got it all figured out, or are you feeling more perplexed than ever?
Maybe a little of both. I think it's impossible to have it all figured out because there's too many moving parts. I do think that there are things that I wish I had known a long time ago. Well, although in truth, there were things that I did know a long time ago, and I wouldn't, like, if somebody had said to me, here's one, like, occasionally I'll speak with a young person and they might ask me, you know, for advice or something. Or maybe they don't, and I just blurt it out anyways. But I regret, and if I could, you know, go over my life with a pink pet eraser or rewind, you know, I regret that I spent many, many years being involved in drama. And I think I was sort of a drama junkie. You know what I mean? If there was a way of doing something that created more sort of concern from others or that sort of thing, man, I plowed right into it. And I would rather not have done that in retrospect. And now I am a person who I kind of, you know, I swing clear of drama. The other thing I think I figured out is that adult life is solving problems. And, you know, sometimes you tell that to a young person, they kind of look at you like, boy, that's not fun. It just is, you know, since we were in the caves, since we could stand upright or perhaps before, where am I going to, you know, how am I going to eat? How am I going to keep a roof over my head? How am I going to have enough money to do either of those things? How am I going to keep supportive people around me? It's problem solving. It's solving little problems and it's solving big problems every day. That's adult life. If you happen to enjoy maybe a sitcom or a 70s rock and roll song, it's somewhere in between those things. Well, that's just gravy.
That's just gravy. You know, they use the word adulting now, and there are all sorts of things going around about adulting and how people don't want to have to do that, engage in adulting. And I saw something funny yesterday, like, I get it. We all have to do some adulting, but really 24/7? And that kind of made me laugh out loud. Like,
yeah, there are no breaks in it. That's, you know, no, but because, yeah, no, it is pretty relentless. Yeah.
Speaking of relentless, I mean, you're in show business and your longevity is unusual, especially for something like comedy. I mean, comedy, so many people sort of like, you know, are this rising star and then their flame is out and you don't ever hear about them again. Why do you think, Paula, you have been able to appeal to people, make them laugh over decades?
I have the best audience in the world. I don't have the largest audience in the world, but I have the best audience in the world. They're fun. I tell myself that they're smart, not that you have to be all that smart to understand my silly sense of humor. But they're incredibly loyal for whatever strange reason.
When you're thinking of your audience, who are you thinking of? When you're writing a joke or thinking about a bit, do you have someone in your mind's eye who's sitting there at a table listening? No?
No, no. Maybe I would, you know what? Maybe I would have a bigger audience if I did. That's the first time that's ever occurred to me. Thank you for that idea. No, I write to entertain myself. I think of stuff that I think is funny and I blurted out on stage. And you know, after all these years, I'm generally right that other people would enjoy it as well, or that my audience would enjoy it as well. But no, I'm alone a lot. And so when I have a thought of something that I think is funny, I really am entertaining myself.
I love that. And so I'm going to ask you something, and I'm sure you didn't come on the show today expecting to be asked to give a lesson or to coach. But I was wondering if you would indulge us by coaching us a little bit and maybe helping those of us who would love to be funnier but aren't very funny think through it. And I'll give you an example and see if this is something that works for you. My daughter has a new apartment. My husband and I were helping her put together a desk from IKEA, and it didn't go well. We got it all together and the drawers didn't go in all the way. And I said, boy, you know, doing this sure makes you feel like you're pretty dumb. And my husband said, I think IKEA hates humanity. And so, of course, obviously he right away had the funnier line. But how would you think about that? If you were helping one of your kids put together a desk and it wouldn't go together, like, how does the Paula Poundstone brain work? How does the turning that into a joke that everybody's going to relate to work?
I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can be helpful here. I'd have been putting in an IKEA desk where the drawers don't go all the way in, I don't think I would have noticed that there was anything wrong. I think I would have assumed that's the new style. Oh, look,
every drawer goes in a different amount.
Yeah. Like, oh, isn't that, I wonder how they did that. Yeah. People say that I suppose it's true that a good deal of my act is what they call observational humor, but I don't really observe that much. I feel, you know, heaven forbid I should ever witness a crime, because I can guarantee you I won't know. Somebody could rob me face to face on the street, and if they asked me to describe them, I bet you I couldn't. I feel like I'm not. I mean, unless he had a jaw that didn't go all the way in, like a IKEA jaw, I don't know if I could recognize.
Okay, so let me ask you this way. Can you tell us something that turned into something you said on stage and how it started, how something entertained you, and you know, when you found yourself laughing and thought, okay, I'm going to use this?
You know, 1,000 years ago, it's a very old thing that I used to do on stage. I haven't done it in a long time. And I'm going to screw up the names. Who was the Kennedy that Sirhan Sirhan shot? Do you remember?
That was Bobby, right?
All right. So I was walking. I guess it must have been. All right. So I was walking through the living room in the house I used to live in San Francisco, and the news was on, and my roommates were in the room watching, but I was just walking through, and they said on the news that Sirhan Sirhan had been up for parole, and he'd been before the parole board, and he said he believed if Kennedy were alive today, he would agree that Sirhan Sirhan should be paroled. And I said, as I was walking through, I said, geez, the one guy who would have supported him, and he shot him. And that was like a staple of my act for I don't know how many years.
And it just came to you. You can't explain how or why.
I can't. I the timing of literally the thing I walked. I think I was going to bring in my dishes from the Stouffer's turkey tetrazzini that I had just enjoyed. In the news story, the lady on the news said the thing, and then I said it as if somebody had shouted it out from the crowd. That's the thing, you know. You know, some people say that, you know, some people do like teach comedy classes and things. And I've never been a believer in that sort of thing. I think for me anyways, the key to the whole thing is the relationship with the audience themselves. Although, as I said, I don't pre-write anything with anybody in particular in mind other than myself. But there is a magic to it, you know, there is, and it was never more powerful. It's not necessarily a magic that happens only in a, you know, in a theater you know, or with a stage and a microphone. When I was a kid, the fun house on the block was the Ross's house. And me and other neighborhood kids would often end up either in the Ross's backyard or in the Ross's basement. And we would get laughing about stuff so hard that you were howling. It was, you know, it was, things were pee your pants funny when we, you know, and I couldn't recreate it. I couldn't say why it was funny. It just was. Because there's a magic when people are together laughing. Yeah. One of the great things about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is that there's really very little feeling of ownership of like a joke. And I have spent 45 years now working alone on stage, but with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, for those who don't know, it's a weekly news quiz show. And it's a weekly comedy news quiz show. And there's three panelists on stage, and Peter Sagal is the host, and Bill Curtis is the scorekeeper. So there's five people on the stage. And if somebody blurts out something, you know, in relation to a news story, a joke, and somebody else adds something onto it, and somebody else adds something onto it, I don't think one of us walks away and goes, well, you know, but the blah, blah, blah was mine. There's just this feeling, this great feeling of, you know, riding a wave when something funny comes up, and then there's another thing and another thing. And the other thing about it is sometimes the jokes feel so logical. It's like it's just laying out on a table for anybody who can grab it. You know, when somebody says something, it's like, well, no, that's the funny thing that you would say there. It's like a note in music where it feels like, oh yeah, that one, you know how when you sing a harmony sometimes, yeah. Nobody ever said to you, well, here's the note that you would harmonize with. You just go there because it's the thing that fits. It fits like a non-IKEA drawer.
So Paula, we do have to take a break, but when we get back, I want to ask you about, you know, your Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me cast members. And if you have anything fun you can share with us, it doesn't really have to be dirt. But I'm going to ask you that after the break. In the meantime, I'm going to give our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or find us on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, our guest today, comedian, author, and podcaster, Paula Poundstone. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainpublic.org, comment on social media, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Okay, Paula, give us the skinny. What are they really like, those people you work with on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
Well, you know, so it is a quiz show, and we are all vying for the mantle of most informed in a given week. And so, you know, we're competitive. There is doping. I know they hate it when I say that, but Mo Rocca, juicer. It's a tough reality. No, it's really, really, really fun to do. I'm very lucky. I remember the first time I ever did the show, which would be about 23 years ago. I was back then, the way we recorded was, A, we did it during the day. B, there was no live audience. It was very similar to what we had to do during the stay-at-home order, except for in this case, we were each in the studio nearest us. And So I've got the goofy, I had never done the show before. I have the goofy headset on and I'm just sitting in a, you know, what do you call the, a studio. Sitting in the studio in Los Angeles, and the show starts up, and Peter's, I don't know, asking questions or talking or whatever. And I was just sort of listening a little bit, trying to get my sea legs. And the director in my headset says, Paula, jump in anytime. Say whatever you want. I can't tell you how rare that is in the world of the show business, you know? Even with things like quote-unquote reality shows, which are not really unscripted, they're just badly scripted. Generally speaking, no one wants you to just jump in and say whatever you want.
Oh, that's great. So I understand that you're a cat lady, not a childless cat lady, but a cat lady. And I'm wondering in this moment, go ahead.
According to J.D. Vance, adopted children don't count.
Oh.
Yeah. So I got to tell you something. I have 10 cats. And he has lost their vote.
10 cats, Paula?
Yeah.
Are you okay? 10's a lot of cats. That's a lot of litter boxes.
It is. It's a lot of work. It's like an industry.
And a lot of vacuuming.
A tremendous amount of vacuuming. You can never keep up with the vacuuming. I used to have 16 cats, and over the years, I mean, since I've had cats, you know, they don't live forever. And so over the years, I've had never more than 16 at once, but probably somewhere in the 30s, maybe even close to 40 at this point, cats in all the years that I've had cats. And I was down, my census was really down. And in fact, it was during the stay-at-home order. Somebody reached out to me via Zoom and said, oh, my neighbor has cats, had kittens. Do you want to come see them? And, you know, if you go see them, that's the same as getting some, because you're not going to walk away from seeing kittens and not get them. And so I ended up getting two, and I put them, you know, I think to some degree we have forgotten how horribly depressing that period of time was. You know, lonely, sad, theaters were closed. I couldn't work. I had no income, blah, blah, blah. Like so much of, you know, of the country and the world. So I get these two kittens. I put them in my bathroom because I don't like to put them out with the general population until I feel like they have their sea legs. So I put them in my bathroom with a litter box and some food and water. And I would go in there and sit down with, you know, like a stick with a feather on the end of it, and play with those kittens. And I'm telling you, it was like taking a drug, but better, much better. It was so much fun and so uplifting. So this summer, not only had, so that was a couple of years ago. No, they're not kittens anymore. They're big cats. This summer, I've had some difficult personal, you know, struggles. And so I got 5 new kittens this summer.
5? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. They're so great.
Do they all get along with one another, or do you have cat fights?
There's a little fur on the floor when I get up in the morning. Sometimes, they're, you know, it's sort of like primary season, but nicer. I mean, eventually they generally get along.
So fur on the floor, but not blood.
Right. Yeah. No reputation permanently damaged. No, no oppo research. They don't do oppo research.
Okay. We're going to go to Jamie calling from Portland. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Well, and listening to Paula and your prompt earlier, Jennifer, it came to me how to ask this question about AI. And you said you ask Paula, well, how can you be funny or how can I go about being funny? And with AI, I guess you can press a button now and ask and get all kinds of different ways about being funny. Okay. That being said, I'm curious what Paula thinks of AI. And there's a whole spectrum of issues with it, from content and things being swept up and pushed out. I'm just curious your thoughts about AI.
And when you say AI, you mean artificial intelligence. Go, Paula.
AI is Frankenstein without the heart. It's something that we are unleashing on ourselves that will be our undoing. I was just listening to a story on the PBS NewsHour. It was from last night's NewsHour, but I was listening to it this morning about the new Russian, you know, instead of the troll farm, they have this new thing they're doing using AI where they're planning to put disinformation. So say I read a particular news source, right, on my flat thing, on my phone.
My flat thing.
They are planning on putting whatever it may be and putting fake information on your personal news source, right? So, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how that will work, but if anybody could figure it out, it's AI and the Russians. But again, and some people may be able to figure out, you know what? That sounds like it's not true. But I think the majority of us, if you're going to a news source that you trust, and by the way, public radio, if you're going to a news source that you trust, well, your guard is down. And that's one of the things they tell you when, you know, in order to stop the spread of disinformation is go to the news source that you trust. Well, if somebody can infiltrate that, you know what? We're in big trouble. So I see no use. And maybe there's some great medical thing or something that AI helps with. I have no idea. But in general, it's like we're helping build something that can attack us. It just seems like the stupidest idea. And in terms of jokes, you know, when we laughed harder in the Ross's basement than I have in my entire life, jokes are not that hard to come up with. We don't need AI for jokes.
Jamie, thanks for your question. We'll move up to Cumberland and Carol. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you. Oh, what a joy to hear you, Paula. And because you always bring, there's always an off, you know, when Paula has something to say, it's always, I'm going to have to think about it and maybe strike me immediately, but it's a thoughtful joke or not even a joke, but an observation. And as a fellow cat person, I do have to ask you, I think over the years I've ended up with, I had at one time 5 cats at one time. I've always had cats, but that was my limit. I don't know how the heck you do it with 10 or more. Oh my God, it makes me a little uncomfortable. That's Looney Tunes. That's Looney. But joy to hear you. Thank you.
Thank you. When I had cats before I had kids. And then when I had kids, you know, we had sort of more and more cats. And when the kids were, I don't know, high school age probably is when we had 16. And one day, years later, one of my adult kids came to visit. And she said, Mom, how many cats do you have now? And I said, 8. And she goes, it's like you don't have any. So I don't know. I kind of like the chaos of having a lot.
Oh, my goodness. Carol, thanks for your question. A couple nice emails in. This one from Trisha. Whenever I see Paula is on the panel for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, I tune in. She always makes me smile and laugh. Thanks for the good times, Paula. And then Amy writes, over the years, you've been such a source of joy and humor. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being smart and funny without ever being mean. Your strong sense of self is beautiful and inspirational. I want to go back to what Amy said about not being mean. Is that sort of a value for you, or is it just kind of who you are? I mean, do you sometimes think of things that are funny and mean and think, no, I'm not going to say it, it's mean?
Oh, certainly. Certainly I've edited something. And have I ever been mean? Sure, absolutely, probably. Have I ever inadvertently said something that probably offended somebody or hurt their feelings? No doubt. Situations are just, you know, who knows? But generally speaking, it is my intention for everyone in the room to have a good time. You know, I'll tell you where one can fall into the trap of being mean is on the internet. And I really try hard not to take the bait. Another thing that, you know, in today's climate, I have literally found myself walking the dog, trying to think of like a clever, insulting name for someone, and had to stop myself and go, what am I doing? Why am I doing that? A, what a waste of time. And B, how childish and stupid. But guess where it came from? And that sort of thing goes on the internet a lot. And I had a great experience yesterday with somebody who had written to me on Twitter. Now, it turns out they didn't feel that they were writing about me exclusively, but they did indeed, you know, put at Paula Poundstone on what they had written. And they were saying, oh, I missed the time when comics were funny. And now, you know, they feel the need to talk about politics. And I responded to the person, which I almost never do. Anytime something feels antagonistic like that, I just let it go. Because you may be arguing with a Russian bot for one thing. But in this case, I got back to the person. And I explained that, yes, I'm a comic, but I'm also just a person. And I have every right to say my opinion, just like any other user on the thing. And other people had sort of attacked him for this, or him or her, I don't even know, for this approach. And then I wrote and I said, I said, I'll bet you we have a tremendous amount in common. And I wrote back and I said, how about this? Simone Biles. The rules of gravity don't apply to her. Do you agree? And the person wrote back and they said, absolutely, I agree. And we spent the rest of the day writing these things back and forth. I'd go, okay, I don't want to step on weak boards here, but kittens? And he wrote back, who doesn't love kittens? It was so much fun. The tendency would be to either block the person or to write something, you know, saying something derogatory about their mother or whatever. But, you know, when you like let that tendency go for a second and then you just engage with the person on a different level, so much fun.
I'm going to go to Barb calling from Brunswick. Hi, Barb. Go ahead.
Hi, Paula. I just want to tell you how excited I am to be able to see you on Saturday night here in Maine, and I love you come to Maine quite a bit. And Yes.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I want you to know that I'm a nobody.
Oh, and I love I'm so what flattered. You Thank you.
And why don't you explain, Paula, to our listeners what a nobody is? Because, Barb, you are not a nobody.
Barb, you're somebody to us. The name of my podcast is Poundstone. So people used to come up to me sometimes and they'd say, hey, I listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And then they'd go, I guess that makes me a nobody. And I never said that to any, but people started calling themselves nobodies. And once the fans started calling themselves that, then we being the voices on my podcast jumped in. And so it is an affectionate term for a Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone listener. And Barb, thank you so much. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone has really terrific, fun fans. And they'd have to be because it is a ridiculously silly show.
Well, Barb, thank you for that. And if you are a nobody, why don't you give us a call? 1-800-399-3566. You can go to talk@mainpublic.org or find us on social media. We're talking with none other than Paula Poundstone, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are speaking with the one and only comedian, podcaster, and panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Paula Poundstone. You still have time to join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post on social media. Before the break, you mentioned your podcast, Paula. I'm wondering how you decide who to interview on that podcast. Are you looking for people who are funny? Are you looking for people who are just... You just want to ask them what the thing that they talk about is the thing that you're interested in that week?
Yes. not always necessarily that week. I mean, I come up with an idea of a subject that I would like to, you know more about or hear an expert speak on. And then I pass that challenge on to my producer. And, you know, when she can get them, she gets them. And, you know, before I started doing this particular podcast, which I think we've been on for maybe 6 years now, my original idea was to do a podcast called How to Move Out of Your Parents' House. And it was to be informative about how to be an adult. You know, how do you read a phone bill? How do you, you know, how do you do this or that? And the reason I thought that was a fun idea was, you know, we spent our entire lives moving out of our parents' house metaphorically. And so I thought, you know, it's not really just aimed at young people moving out of their parents' house. It's everybody. And my partners vetoed my idea. But I snuck it in. Little do they know that although it's called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and the truth is the majority of the show is just full of ridiculously silly stuff, but we do pride ourselves in interviewing on most episodes someone who has real information to share on a topic. And, you know, we make jokes during the interview, but, you know, depending on the topic, to what degree. So it's, you know, it is a topic that's something that I feel like certainly I don't have a full library of information on. And that means the sky's the limit because I know almost nothing about anything. So we've had, it's not celebrity driven, but we have had celebrities. But I think one of my favorite guests ever was very early on in the show was a plumber. Part of the reason it was one of my favorites is because I can remember what they said even 6 years later, which is occasionally pour warm water down your toilets and your sinks. Like they suggested monthly, and don't flush Kleenex. Neither of which I'd ever heard before. And both have improved my plumbing life. it's so rare that someone can just tell you like, these golden nuggets like that, where it actually one or two things change your relationship with your pipes. Mm-hmm. And then
I think the young people call them hacks. So don't flush Kleenex. That's a good hack.
I mean, I have crazy allergies and so does my daughter and so does my assistant Wendell.
Well, wait a minute. You have 10 cats and you have crazy allergies.
Yeah. That was an oversight. It could have happened to anybody. But yeah, I mean, I always say to people, we can get further down the road with no gas in the car than we can with no Kleenex in the car. There have been times where we headed out to go someplace and we're like, do you have any Kleenex? No. Do you have any Okay, we got to go home. But I had never heard that you weren't supposed to flush Kleenex. And apparently that was a good deal of the plumbing problems that we were having. Because when I stopped flushing Kleenex, it really did improve my life in a lot of ways. And there was a guy just the other day. In fact, it's on the episode that will be coming out this Tuesday. I interviewed a guy about owls. And we have an owl in a pine tree in my neighbor's yard. And he was just fascinating. He was funny. He lives in Montana and he's like an owl expert. He's involved in, you know, owl projects and things. In fact, one of the things he told me was he was telling me about how they tag them with a little bracelet around their little owl, you know, legs. And I suggested that it might be a money saving thing to, you know, the Swifties like to make these bracelets with the, yeah, I suggested that they hook up with the Swifties and get little owl bracelets with the letters on them, right, from the Swifties. And that might be cheaper.
Right.
Then, yeah.
It's a good idea, Paula. We're going to go.
I thought it was.
David calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hello. Hello, Paula. How are you doing?
Hey, David.
Hey, good to hear you again. And I'm going to tell you, it was good to hear you talk about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, because I love that show and I miss when you're not on it. And I have one observation that I've made about that show with friends of mine. I think the best lineup for the panelists would be you, Mo Rocca, and Alonzo Bowden. And here's why. Mo, he really just has that really quick wit. He can come right back at you with something, and it's just so over the top. And then Alonzo, he can play that semi-straight guy, but he can still give it to you straight with his delivery, but he's that semi-straight guy. And then there's you, Paula. You're the one who comes out of left field with stuff that no one has thought about, and it's just so over-the-top hilarious. I think you three should be the lineup going forward forever and even consider doing some shows together. But I'm also looking forward to seeing you when you come here to Clearwater next year.
Oh,
David,
terrific.
Thanks
Thank
for calling.
Thank you so much, David. I'm calling that lineup into the top brass.
Great. And David, thanks for streaming Main Calling from Florida. Paula, you're going to be on Wait, Wait next at the end of the month. Is that right?
I don't know. Am I? Yeah, probably.
The website says September 28th.
Does it? I think I'm in the one that's in Kansas City, I think. Does it say that?
That's not what I was looking up, but maybe our producer. Yes. Our producer, Jonathan, says your publicist told him that you're going to tape on September 26th for September 28th. So there you go.
I have the strangest people that work for me. I have a shy publicist. I have an agent that doesn't like to talk on the phone. And I have a manager that's very disorganized. So I don't know if you can trust any one of them.
Well, it sounds like all together, sort of like the Main Calling team. When you put three brains together here, you usually get it right most of the time. David, thank you for calling. We're going to go to Amy from Bryant Pond. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hello. I just wanted to say I love Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Paula, we love listening to you. Jennifer, Main Calling is just wonderful, keeps us well informed. And I wasn't going to call. I was just going to listen. But I heard your story about your daughter moving into an apartment. Well, we had a similar experience. My daughter recently moved into a second floor apartment. And she measured. We found her a nice couch. And husband and I went to pick it up. Drove it to the apartment. We got to the front porch and she measured the apartment area for the couch perfectly, but not the front door to get in.
Oh, right.
So we are standing there on this porch and my husband looked and said, okay, I think we can get the legs off the couch and get it up the stairs. Abby, go get me the tools, that bag of tools that I brought up last week. And she said, they're on the ski tuning table in the basement at home, so we have nothing, and we need a Phillips head screwdriver. And as it turns out, there were contractors working, so we were able to get the screwdriver. But on a side note, my husband's name is Philip, and one of us made a joke about a Phillips head screwdriver and Philip, and it bombed. He didn't find it funny at all, Paula, so...
Oh, geez.
Well, it's job security for Paula. My son has actually had a couch getting stuck in an apartment doorway experience as well. It ended up being sawed in half and then propped up with books for a good part of his college experience. So I think this might be a little bit of a universal experience, Paula.
You know what? This is a great idea, which is I'm going to have somebody from a moving company.
Oh,
come
yeah.
talk about, in fact, oh my gosh, this would be the,
yes.
Well, maybe it's too late. I was going to say this would be the time to do it because September, but I think a lot of kids are already back at college, but it's such a great, because I wouldn't have thought to measure the door. I don't even know that I would have measured the living room properly, but certainly I wouldn't have thought to measure the door.
So and sometimes the angle, you know, the angle from the hallway to the door, that can get you too. So I think a mover would be a great idea. And I bet they have some stories. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that I'm writing it down.
I was going to say, write it down, Paula, write it down. Amy, thank you so much for calling. Oh, my goodness. Let's see here. Marianne on Facebook writes, I have 7 cats of my own. Paula, you are bringing out the cat ladies. 7 cats of my own. I also feed all the ferals in my neighborhood. We have a huge feral cat problem in the town of Washington. We're trying to put together a fundraiser to trap them and get them. She wrote vetted, but I have a feeling it means spayed. A shout out from Paula might be helpful. September 27th at the Evening Star Grange in Old Union Road in Washington, 5 to 6:30. So I'm guessing that you think that's a great idea.
I do think that's a great idea. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if y'all have ever seen the chart about the rate at which cats populate, but it's a lot. It's so, you know, a couple of feral cats. Next thing you know, you had a colony, a pride. So that is a great idea.
We had a caller just a couple of minutes ago who laid out his perfect panel for Wait, Don't Tell Me. Now we have an email from Barney. What would be Paula's ideal panel for Wait, Don't Tell Me?
Oh, I don't know. There's so many really great panelists. You know, there's a guy, I've been there for 23 years, and anybody who came after me, or even like a couple weeks before me to the panel, I consider new, no matter how many years they've been there. But there's a guy, I'm prone to saying he's new, but I think in reality, he's been there for years. Because, you know, they rotate us in a not as I can tell, a particularly organized way. But so it's very possible that there's somebody that I haven't worked with for years, but they've been there the whole time and I just didn't know it. But there's a guy named Josh Gondelman, I think that's his last name, who is so damn funny and clever that I find myself just sort of staring at him sometimes, trying to figure out how does he do it? And very sweet and nice to be with. I love being with Tom Baudet. Partly because he's really, really funny and partly because he's just such a great guy. You know what Tom Baudet does? He builds stuff with wood.
He's got a wood shop. You know,
yeah, he has a wood shop and he has a community wood shop. It's a thing. He teaches other people how to build stuff with wood. And when you talk about, you know, let's face it, we're destroying the world and there's not going to be an Earth in a fairly short amount of time, or else silly, stupid Putin is going to unleash some horrible thing on us and we'll have to, you know, start from scratch. What do you need? You need a guy who can build with wood, or a woman who can build with wood. And it's good to have one with a sense of humor.
True.
And there's where you got your Tom Baudet.
Anne in Falmouth, go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. Paula Poundstone, I'm from Ireland, and I'm calling to see, do you have even a tiny little bit of Irish blood?
I think I'm told that I do. I've never done that that DNA thing, because the last thing I want is more relatives. But I believe a lot of people say I look Irish. That may just be because I'm ruddy.
And do you say that because her sense of humor is sort of an Irish sense of humor?
Listen, I take people to Ireland 2 times a year. I just got back with a spring group and I'm from there. I've been doing this for many years. My children were born here. But even my kids and grandkids, they all have that dry Irish wit. And it has to be somewhere in your gene pool, Paula. And don't be scared to get the DNA. I have relatives in Australia that reach out to me. And I just don't respond because they're like fourth or fifth cousins or something.
I want to go on your Ireland trip, but I'll bet you it takes money and time. Those are two big areas for me, money and time. I got some deficits there.
And thank you for your call. And Anne, you're the last call. And Paula, that's it. I'm so happy to have had you on the show for the hour. Thank you so much. Paula Poundstone, author, podcaster, and you know her from NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, a public health update, including what to know about the new COVID vaccine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.